The subject of this cassette tape and monograph is metaphysics, mind control, ELF transmissions, and weather modifications. I pondered for 3 years before finally deciding to do this tape message. The so-called fourth dimension is little understood in the West, and critics are very quick to downplay and denigrate matters of this kind. I might add that several Christian preachers whom I consulted felt that it was a subject in which I should not dabble. Having taken note of their well-meaning advice, I weighed it up against the mounting evidence I accumulated during the past 3 years and decided to go ahead with my program. Physics have been burdened by more charlatans than any other sector of parapsychology. The Soviet Union has dealt with the subject by sentencing quacks to life imprisonment in Siberia. As a result, true psychics are being encouraged to come forward by the state today. Parapsychology is an advanced science in that country. By contrast, because of the enormous number of fakers and charlatans in the United States and Christian disquiet about the supernatural, psychics are not very well thought of and are often derided and scorned. I have had some truly remarkable experiences with two very good American psychics whose ability to, quote, see, unquote, future events proved outstanding. Can minds be bent to a particular pattern? Can people carry out a vile and vicious crime and have no recollection of it afterwards? Can people be persuaded that they did commit an assassination, even when they haven't? The answer in these cases is an unqualified yes. In America, we have had a number of mind-altering, mind-bending experiments conducted by various United States government agencies. The Central Intelligence Agency, Stanford Research Institute, and Vacaville Prison, to name but a few specific instances. I believe there are a few people who still believe that Saran shot Robert Kennedy. Normal forensic evidence proves conclusively that he couldn't have done so. Kennedy was shot from the back at close range with a .22 caliber assassin's revolver. While Saran appeared to be the likely killer, evidence shows that he was in front of Kennedy when the shots that killed him were fired. When he was arrested, medical evidence attested to the fact that he appeared to be in a dazed, disoriented condition and hallucinating. Lee Harvey Oswald was also the most unlikely person to have assassinated John F. Kennedy. Secret medical evidence, which is available outside the sealed files in the case, show that Oswald appeared in a dazed and disoriented condition on many occasions. Oswald appears to have gone to the Dallas School Book Depository building firmly believing that he could hit a moving target with an old Mannlicher single-shot bolt-action rifle. According to leaked medical evidence, it was only when he heard the shots that killed Kennedy that Oswald was jerked back to reality. Donald DeFries is another example of mind-bending. From an FBI agent, he was turned into a radical revolutionary at Vacaville Prison in California. Even psychologists are not immune to such periods of being in a daze. For instance, an examination is known to have been done on a certain Robert Webster, who returned to the United States after defecting to the USSR at about the same time as Oswald. The psychiatrist said he couldn't be sure that the man he examined was Webster and not Oswald. Webster closely resembled Oswald. Secret reports have the psychiatrist feeling dizzy just prior to his examination of Webster Oswald. How such dizzy spells can be induced and brought on will be explained as we proceed. The Central Intelligence Agency does work with the KGB when deemed necessary, and this is borne out by the fact that Oswald was seen talking with Valery Kostikov, an agent of the 13th Department of the KGB. That fact appears not to have been reported by the Central Intelligence Agency. Was the man who talked with Kostikov the real Lee Harvey Oswald, or was it one of the three known, quote, Oswalds, unquote? The CIA did not report. For those of you who may not be familiar with the functions of the 13th Department of the KGB, it is responsible for political kidnapping, assassinations, and sabotage. According to one of my most reliable sources of information, a man who has never once steered me wrong, the disappearance of one of our top officers engaged in space launch control and command systems for satellites, U.S. Air Force Captain William R. Hughes, Jr., was an action carried out by the KGB's 13th Department. While on a NATO mission to Amsterdam, Captain Hughes, quote, disappeared, unquote, on July 18, 1983, and has never been seen again. I have no doubt that Captain William R. Hughes did not defect to the enemy, as has been claimed by apologists for the USSR who incensed Congress, but was, quote, induced, unquote, to go with his kidnappers. According to my sources, Captain Hughes carried with him most vital data which would not have been available to him at the Air Force Operational Test Center at Kirkland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, other than through his work. He worked in New Mexico as a specialist in space launch command control and communications surveillance systems, and carried this information that he had gained from his work with him to Amsterdam. Captain Hughes was responsible for training field range officers responsible for destroying rockets which failed to function correctly after launch. The significance of this will become clear when I get to the subject of a series of U.S. rocket failures. As such, Hughes would have been a valuable capture for the KGB. My information is that Captain Hughes attended a NATO steering committee meeting in Amsterdam. The incredible thing about these meetings is that they are virtually an open forum. Everybody knows in advance where they are to be held. The venue is so lacking in real security that the sessions can easily be penetrated and observed by trained operatives. My information is that two officers of the KGB's 13th Department trailed Captain Hughes to his hotel. I know which hotel it was, but for fear of a lawsuit, I cannot name it at this time. Once the coast was clear, the two KGB operatives rented a room next door to the one occupied by Hughes. There is every reason to believe that during the night of the 17th of July 1983, Hughes was subjected to a continuous bombardment of very low-level electromagnetic radiation. Very low-level electromagnetic pulses cause marked changes in the electrical system of the human brain, resulting in disorientation, a dazed and confused condition, nausea, fear, and hallucination. If the target, and that I use as a quotation, is subjected to very low-level electromagnetic attack bursts over a short period, nervous disorders, especially hallucinations, and dazed, disorientated states will definitely manifest themselves. Too much exposure to very low-level electromagnetic radiation can actually, quote, turn off, unquote, the electrogram circuitry of the human brain and result in death, which is called, in intelligence parlance, switching off the target. My source in London, who is a specialist in electromagnetic, extremely low frequency, says that KGB's 13th Department is now equipped with short life systems capable of stunning a victim. The system is portable and can be carried in a normal-sized, normal-looking briefcase. If the two KGB officers gained access to Captain Hughes's room and woke him, he could have been stunned by a tremendous burst of light in his face from such a device. It is my understanding that a simplified version of the very low-level electromagnetic radiation stun gun is about to be marketed commercially, and since I wrote this, that such a device is now on the market. The manufacturer with whom I was in direct communication told me it is an excellent way to defend yourself against attackers, would-be muggers, etc., He also told me that such a burst of light totally incapacitates the person on the receiving end, and to quote his words, leaving him dazed, disoriented, and staggering around like a drunk for at least 30 minutes, unquote. My belief is that Captain Hughes was dealt with by either one of these two methods. It would then have been a very easy task to help a drunken buddy walk out of the hotel around the corner to a waiting KGB car. This is not science fiction, but 1987 reality, and of course now in 1991, I can tell you that there's been a great deal more investigation, and certainly the facts that I disclosed in 1987 have been more than substantiated. Unfortunately, when Soviet scientists began their experiments in very low-level frequency electromagnetic radiation back in 1932, they were sneered at by United States scientists. At the time, the Soviets were engaged in a search for a possible connection between mental telepathy and this type of extremely low-frequency experiment, and quite by chance stumbled onto the profound effects of such measures upon the human nervous system and brain, recognizing its long-range military applications. In one of my messages, or else it would have been in World Economic Review, I told how the Warsaw Pact forces could subject all senior NATO officers to a ceaseless bombardment of microwaves and scramble their brains before launching their long-expected attack on Western Europe. And let me add, in 1991, that attack is closer at hand than ever before. I said at the time, and I believe it was about a year or perhaps 14 months ago, that such an attack would leave NATO command general staff and senior officers completely dazed and disoriented, unable to give orders or control operations. I can tell you that such very low-level electromagnetic transmission systems are part of the Soviet Armed Forces arsenal under the control of a special KGB GRU unit attached to Warsaw Pact staff command units. Let me say that evidence I received in 1991 following the Gulf War is that the United States used this kind of weapon on the high command of the Iraqi forces and on the soldiers themselves. Before going any further, I believe it is necessary to give you an overview of intelligence. Now, this is a word frequently bandied about by persons who have little understanding and even less knowledge of what intelligence is comprised of. Such persons may be compared to those who make liberal use of the word scientific to bolster their arguments and promote their point of view, most often in the advertising world. Apparently, the word scientific or scientifically proven is enough to sell even the most useless product. United States intelligence services and security systems cover intelligence, collection, analysis of all types of signals, covert actions, offensive and defensive, by means of reconnaissance satellites, ships, intercept stations, such as at Cheltenham, GCHQ, Cyprus, Diego Garcia, radars, underwater surveillance, and by overt traditional and clandestine people source, the old-fashioned spy to be precise. The intelligence budget is known to a few people, but my Washington source tells me it is in excess of $16 billion per annum, and probably by 1991 this figure has been very much increased. Similarly, the number of persons employed in intelligence and security is not known. Some are perhaps not even classified as intelligence operatives, where they work in intelligence and research. INR, for example. When I first came to the United States, I was probably the only one writing a true intelligence newsletter, and I probably still am. But following my first papers, there came a flood of so-called intelligence, unquote, newsletters, most of the writers not ever having been anywhere near intelligence and knowing very little about it. In fact, large numbers began to copy my work, and some of them even had the audacity to write to me and ask me whether my work didn't perhaps closely resemble so-and-so. I could not think of a more audacious statement than that. Among the major intelligence agencies of the United States is found the top-secret National Reconnaissance Office, the NRO. Before this message, very few, if any, of you will ever have heard of the National Reconnaissance Office. But don't worry about it. You're in good company. The NRO was established on 25th of August, 1960, and was kept secret from government and the American people for 13 years. Its existence was revealed in 1973 through what my source believes was a deliberate failure to remove its name from a list of intelligence agencies, and Senate committee said should make its budget known to the taxpayers. The Senate committee is called Special Senate Committee on Secret and Confidential Documents. The NRO is still a secret organization with only very obscure references to it in the DOD, Department of Defense annual report. The executive branch of government has, as far as I know, never said anything publicly about NRO's existence, apart from the Murphy Commission's mention of it as a semi-autonomous office within the Defense Department, with the largest budget of any intelligence agency operating overhead reconnaissance programs for the entire intelligence community. End of quote. Now, please do not write and ask for documentation. This kind of request is bothersome. No one can document what I've just revealed without running very serious risks. And besides, I cannot compromise my sources. Those newsletter copiers of my intelligence could perhaps better advise you where to go to find this kind of information, but I seriously doubt it. The NRO has its offices in the Pentagon 4C-956, to be precise, officially called Office of Space Systems. The NRO is responsible for managing the entire satellite reconnaissance program, working closely with the CIA Directorate of Science and Technology Satellite Development Effort and its SIGINT operations. The NRO and CIA Directorate of Science and Technology Department developed the Rhyolite and KH-11 satellites, working alongside NavalX, that's Naval Electronic Systems Command. He developed the White Cloud Ocean Surveillance Satellite. The Navy NSA Office on Microwave Space and Mobile Systems is working on extremely low-level electromagnetic radiation microwave systems, similar to those already in use by the Soviet Union. Had our science community not been so disdainful of the 1932 experiments in this field carried out by the Soviet Union, we would not now be 55 years behind them in this vital area. All the aforementioned intelligence units, including the CIA's Directorate of Science and Technology, are subordinate to the National Reconnaissance Office, which gives you a good idea of its importance. The NRO is engaged in finding out why there have been so many launch failures in the past 3 years. And remember, this was written in 1987. Those failures still continue today. And why there have been so many civilian airliner crashes, and is busy investigating the Challenger disaster. We now know the outcome of those investigations. Challenger was downed by a massive ELF strike against it, coming from the Soviet Union. The NRO is very well qualified to come up with the answers we need so urgently. It was originally founded to investigate problems holding back our early rocket, missile, and satellite launch and positioning programs. The Air Force Special Projects Office Space Division, El Segundo, California, is also under NRO control. Its function is to gather satellite strategic reconnaissance data for use by national intelligence organizations. It directs design, development, and procurement of photographic and other type of military reconnaissance satellites and their subsystems. It is located close to TRW's use and other manufacturing entities engaged in the manufacture of such systems. It is responsible for the West Wing project. NRO is thus the most important of all U.S. intelligence agencies. It was to this division that Captain William R. Hughes, Jr. was attached. His capture and subsequent brainwashing by KGB specialists represents a major triumph for Soviet GRU and KGB operations, as we now know. U.S. Air Force Captain Hughes was a training specialist who knew everything there is to know about our rocket launcher vehicles used to carry satellites of various designations and NASAS space shuttle vehicles such as Atlantis and Challenger. We know now that the result of what they achieved by brainwashing Captain Hughes was put to good use, and we've seen so many of our space shuttle programs damaged, and even the latest KH-12 satellite and the Zircon satellites were shot down because of knowledge forced out of Captain Hughes. Captain Hughes, as a lead analyst, would have known the frequency vibration of all of the rockets in use by the United States. Captain Hughes is not the only one to be subjected to very low-level electromagnetic radiation. I will examine a number of other cases as we go along, including scientists in the intelligence community who had their brainwaves switched off, resulting in death. The second most important intelligence agency is the National Security Agency, next in total secrecy to the NRO, and probably the most secretive of all of our agencies. The NSA followed after the Armed Forces Security Agency, AFSA, on October 24, 1952, when the NSA was brought into existence by President Truman in a top-secret memo to the Secretaries of Defense and State Departments, which at the same time abolished AFSA. The National Security Agency reaches out far beyond intelligence gathering for the United States Armed Forces. The common mistake is the belief that the NSA is part of the Department of Defense, the DOD. While it is certainly in the DOD, the NSA is not part of the Department of Defense, a very important distinction. The charter of the National Security Agency has never been made public. It remains top secret. Other intelligence newsletter copiers, please take note. In fact, National Security Council Directive No. 6, Communications and Electronics Intelligence, was only issued on September 5, 1958, 6 years after Truman ordered the NSA to be set up. The National Security Agency is responsible for SIGINT operations, which take in communications intelligence, that's called COMINT, and electronic intelligence, ELINT, duties. It was this unit of the NSA that trapped Alexander Haig and Ariel Sharon while they were plotting Israel's invasion of Lebanon. The same unit uncovered the scurrilous conduct of Haig vis-à-vis the Argentine nation, whom he betrayed on behalf of Lord Carrington, the owner of the Falkland Islands. Instead of Haig being executed for treason, the trilateral CFR para-upper-level government of the United States ordered President Reagan to hush up the scandal and allow the pestiferous Watergate deep throat traitor to resign, an action which led to the resignation in utter disgust of at least two senior NSA officials who were instrumental in unmasking this evil creature of the CFR Trilateral High Command. The National Security Agency's COMINT program covers activities which produce by COMINT interception and processing of foreign communications, all messages sent by wire, teletype, telex, telefax, radio, and any and all electromagnetic means, and processing communications such as foreign encrypted messages, no matter how transmitted. The interception covers intercept and direct finding, search, etc. Processing covers estimation, transmitter operator identification, signal analysis, traffic analysis, crypto analysis, decryption, study of plain text, and reporting results. Technically, this means that the NSA is capable of listening in on one of your telephone calls to your husband at his office, or telling the time on your watch as you stand talking with a colleague in the parking lot, this by means of Rhyolite satellites. It means that the NSA can intercept every long-distance and transatlantic telephone call, and so on. ELINT covers the collection, observation, and recording and processing of information obtained from foreign non-communications, electromagnetic radiation coming from other than an atomic explosion. In what is now known to have been a very low-level electromagnetic attack, but which at the time was thought to be a defection, Victor Norris, William H. Martin, and Vernon F. Mitchell appeared in Moscow, and TASS, the Soviet news agency, said they were defectors. These defections occurred in 1960 and 1963, when the United States was still in the period where it regarded very low-level electromagnetic radiation as science fiction, in much the same way as the vast majority of Americans still regard mental telepathy and psychic phenomena as quackery, without substance. But the Soviet Union has always taken it seriously. In a demonstration carried out at the Psychic Research Center in Moscow, a psychic actually caused a burn mark to appear on a subject's arm. The subject was in the next room, and the burn mark materialized before some 30 Soviet scientists gathered to witness the demonstration. The death of Jack Dunlap, who worked for the NSA from 1958, was only recently attributed to psychic interaction. Dunlap, who was recruited in Turkey, turned out to be a GRU agent, and it is believed that he was induced to commit suicide by gassing himself in his car. Apparently, his Soviet controllers felt that suspicion over the defection of Hamilton, Martin, and Mitchell would eventually point at Dunlap as being involved, and he might have confessed to his role and blown the ELF experiment wide open. In order to fully understand the vital role played by the National Security Agency, let me explain that NSA develops the codes used by the President of the United States to identify himself before a nuclear strike he may be about to order can be carried out. One can imagine the ramifications if an unauthorized agency, let's say the GRU or KGB, could break these codes and falsely identify one of its members as the President, and order a nuclear first strike by the United States, providing the excuse for a massive retaliatory strike by the USSR, even if only a 2-time ICBM launch before the mistake recall cancel order could be given, that would be by the GRU imposter, so as to limit damage to the Soviet Union, which could then justify its retaliatory strike on the grounds that the United States launched the first strike. The National Security Agency also secures data and voice transmission links on Defense Department satellites. Defense Department Satellite Communication Systems, known as DSCS. It was data similar to this which Richard Burt released in his New York Times article, causing panic in NATO and forcing new voice transmission codings to be hastily brought into position as damage control mission. For his treachery and betrayal of his country, Burt was promoted and sent to West Germany as United States Ambassador on the recommendations of Henry Kissinger, George Shultz, and David Rockefeller. It certainly paid Burt to publish Vital Satellite Data Systems, that's called SDS, and it cost our country millions of dollars and 3 days of intense activity to rectify the position. The NSA creates communications procedures and codes for 18 government agencies, including the State Department, Department of Defense, and the FBI. For example, FBI agents have to use a special scrambler phone for sensitive voice communications, using a different code every day, which code it receives from the NSA. The NSA has also created a computer security center to prevent hacking, that is, unauthorized entry and access to both business and government computers dealing with sensitive material. The NASA's SIGINT role reaches way past code-making and breaking processes. It gathers foreign military, economic, and political intelligence from the USSR and all third world countries, and I've often emphasized that much of intelligence evolves around economic intelligence, which should never be underestimated. The NSA can intercept diplomatic communications Even conversations between military commanders in the USSR and normal commercial communications. Nothing but nothing is private and personal when it comes to the National Security Agency. The NSA's biggest success was its intercept of radio telephone conversations between Soviet leaders while they were traveling in their cars. The NSA can and does intercept private and commercial messages sent by satellite as well as microwave telephone. Both the Intelsat and Comsat phone links are monitored around the clock by the NSA. I repeat a warning. Nothing is private. The NSA has the full capability of pulling in signals from Soviet military communications, monitoring electronic radar signals, also known as radant signals, from aircraft, and TELINT, that's telemetry intelligence, the language used by rockets upon launch. It was a TELINT mission that sent KAL-007 crashing to its doom after passing over Sakhalin Island, where the Soviet Union was testing a new series of rockets. The NSA staff also monitors what is called submarine signatures and all data from spacecraft. In 1975, the NSA monitored all cables leaving the United States via the RCA, Global and ITT networks. That operation went by the code name Shamrock. Just to demonstrate what the NSA has become in reach and power, no United States president after Harry Truman knew about the Shamrock program. I will not digress too far into the activities of the Central Intelligence Agency, as these activities are relatively well known to the various organizations who watch the CIA, except to say that its research and analysis branch is located in the State Department, a fact known to very few people other than insiders with a thorough knowledge of the CIA. And those who love to copy my work were quick to jump on this and pass it off as their original information. I suppose I should be flattered, but I think the whole process has gone too far. Briefly, the CIA has five main functions, and they are: one, or A, advise the NSA in matters concerning national security involving government departments; B, make recommendations to the National Security Council to coordinate intelligence roles of government departments and agencies; C, correlate and evaluate intelligence relating to national security matters; D, provide additional information to the National Security Council in matters of national security. To carry out duties and functions related to intelligence as directed by the National Security Council. Now, you may think that with such a vast array of security measures at our disposal, America must be very secure. If this is what you believe, you are absolutely wrong. Our security arrangements are easily circumvented by traitors, like those who went to Moscow in February 1987 to meet with Gorbachev and arranged for the removal of all intermediate-range missiles from Europe, leaving our European allies totally helpless in the face of Warsaw Pact forces' superior and non-verifiable missiles. The meeting held in Moscow was attended by Cyrus Vance, Henry Kissinger, Harold Brown, and Jean Kirkpatrick, among others. General Bernard Rogers, the former NATO commander, has denounced this betrayal, but part of the voice betrayers, a relatively new and deadly weapon, is now in possession of the Soviet Union. In the face of the threat posed by this weapon, CIA Rhyolite U-2 aircraft and KH-11 surveillance is obsolete because the surveillance systems can easily be knocked out or switched off at will by the deadly ELF, extremely low frequency electromagnetic transmission weapon. This weapon was in the making since 1930, when United States scientists dismissed it as science fiction, in much the same way as congressional apologists for Moscow laugh at our FBI program, calling it Star Wars, which is the biggest threat facing American armed forces and its space satellite defensive system. The Soviet Union has both fixed and portable ELF stations inside and outside its territories. Soviet Chief of Staff Marshal Sergei Akramaya hinted at the deployment of ELF stations back in August 1986, when he said that the Kremlin has an unpleasant reply, a surprise response if the United States deploys the SDI shield in space. Akramaya said, and I quote, "The Soviet Union will quickly use a response of which the United States has no inkling as yet." End of his statement. The intelligence expert who analyzed his statement told me that there isn't the slightest doubt that Akramaya was referring to the Tesla Scala ELF weapon system capable of mass destruction of all of our defenses and scrambling the brainwaves of our top military and civilian leaders, every branch of government, including the President and his cabinet, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the National Security Council. Chilling, but highly possible. Not that the United States does not possess ELF, an acronym for Extremely Low Frequency Transmission. The tragedy is that because of a campaign by apologists for Moscow in Congress and the scientific community on the side of Moscow, ELF has been ridiculed for years as science fiction. Due to a slow start, we are now only in the planning and experimental stage, 15 years behind the USSR, and in the update 1991, I can tell you that this has not changed. They are still the Soviet Union years ahead of us. There is no doubt that Oswald Saran and Donald DeFries were altered by ELF emissions. It is also likely that such experiments are presently conducted at the notorious Vacaville prison. Was David Hinckley subjected to ELF emissions before attempting to assassinate President Reagan? All factors point in that direction. Altering a person's brain waves is a technique which is here to stay. The U.S. Navy has installed many miles of underground antenna in Michigan and Wisconsin to send encoded signals to our nuclear submarines at sea. The naval intelligence is probably the most complex of the three branches of our armed forces. To it is assigned a substantial intelligence collecting role. The Director of Naval Intelligence, the DNI, is supervised by the Office of Naval Intelligence, the ONI. Under the DNI, there are many divisions such as Plans and Policy and Estimates Division, the Special Projects Division, the Security of Military Information Division, and System Architecture Division. Although Israeli spy for Moscow, Jonathan Pollard, was employed as a civilian counter-terrorist specialist at the U.S. Naval's Investigative Services Anti-Terrorist Alert Center, it is highly likely that he gained access to some of the most sensitive secrets which passed through DNI, Director of Naval Intelligence. We shall never know what terrible damage this spy did to our security, nor all that he passed on to Israel and hence to the Soviet Union. What we do know is that notwithstanding the most blatant cover-up attempt by CFR Secretary of State George Shultz, Judge Abram Sofar of the State Department, and Shimon Peres, the then Prime Minister of Israel, Pollard was not running a rogue operation outside of the knowledge of the Israeli government. Pollard was a Mossad spy under the direct control of Lechem and Mossad controllers Ilyan Ravid and Yosef Yugar, working out of the Israeli embassy in Washington, who in turn were controlled by Israeli master spies David Kimchi and Dirty Rafa Etian, from out of Tel Aviv. No matter how blatantly Mr. Yitzhak Shamir lied to President Reagan during his Washington visit, and no matter how much Shamir says the matter is now behind us, one of the worst breaches of our security was carried out by the man I have named with the full approval of the Israeli government. In plain language, Mr. Shamir is a common liar. Moreover, it is known that U.S. Naval Intelligence submarine signature intelligence codes were totally compromised by Pollard, who had access to the Naval Intelligence Support Center and the Navy Operational Intelligence Center, known as the NOIC, responsible for naval security and counterintelligence affairs, as well as the processing and support systems dealing with automated naval intelligence processing and communication systems. What a godsend was Pollard and the State of Israel to the KGB and the GRU. Yet we still roll out the red carpet for Mr. Shamir and continue to give Israel $4 billion of our tax money annually. Would anyone care to explain? The Naval X Division runs the Ruthin Project, which includes Submarine Reconnaissance and Special Operations Division, which is heavily engaged in Tesla-type Stala weapon systems. The Submarine Reconnaissance and Special Operations Division covers special Navy operations such as Sand Dollar, Desktop, and Holystone. These are obviously code names. The 50 miles of cable installed underground in Michigan and Wisconsin has to do with these highly sensitive operations. Unfortunately, the majority of us know nothing about what goes on in our intelligence services, and I might say that this applies to those, quote, intelligence, unquote, newsletter writers who have mushroomed since I first came to the United States in 1969. Thus, we are prone to Madison Avenue Moscow propaganda, which derides any and every effort on the part of our country in the realms of ELF as science fiction, wacky time warp stuff, and parapsychology cookery. The way the jackals of the media have downplayed our vital SDI program by using the KGB-invented Star Wars label to denigrate our last hope of survival, and I might tell you in 1991 it is worse than ever, is a case in point. Added to that, we have a bunch of congressmen working for Moscow who are hell-bent on slashing the funding for SDI until it will become too late due to lack of money to deploy it, and that is exactly what has happened. These words were written in 1987, and now in 1991 we can see just how accurate they have proved to be. The new weapons of mass destruction, which we threw away, are the brainchild of Yugoslavian-born naturalized American citizen Nikola Tesla, who took U.S. citizenship in 1939 and worked timelessly and tirelessly to achieve recognition from the United States government during his entire adult life. His work was often dubbed, quote, bizarre, unquote, by enemies of this country, such as the New York Times. Tesla proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that mind control and weather control are practical and fully achievable, yet he was labeled a crackpot and bizarre. There exists absolute proof that David Rockefeller's staff, who combed the directories of the United States Patent Office, picked up Tesla's patents and shipped them to the Soviet Union. David Rockefeller maintains a large staff who work at the U.S. Patent Office in Washington for the sole purpose of sending U.S. patents to that country. These creatures can be seen at work every day of the week at the U.S. Patent Office in Washington, which is somehow open to everyone. Can you imagine that happening in the USSR? Nikola Tesla was the most important inventor of the 20th century, and even probably the 21st century, yet he was fobbed off as eccentric, bizarre, and weird. Tesla invented the electric light bulb, not Thomas Edison. Tesla invented wireless telegraphy, not Marconi, although it is known that wireless telegraphy was in the hands of Masonic leaders Pike and Mazzini before Tesla came up with it. Tesla died penniless and lonely in a Manhattan hotel room. Tesla worked on his own in a tiny Manhattan laboratory and later worked out of Greenwich Village. He received no government help or support and was shunned by the industrial giants of America, but won recognition by many international scientists. Tesla invented the polyphase electric motor, the radio-guided torpedo, and the bladeless steam turbine. Tesla was a giant among men, a one-man industrial revolution whose inventions and ideas were often ignored by the United States. At one stage, Tesla was employed by Edison, but the two could not agree because Edison favored DC, direct current, whereas Tesla said that AC, alternating current, was the better of the two systems. Tesla did receive some belated recognition from the United States when in 1943 the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Marconi's patent, recognizing that it had been preceded by Tesla's radio transmission achievement. Would you please turn your tape over for a continuation of the program? Research and discoveries lay in the fields of vibratory impulses and weather control. Tesla claimed that he could split the earth with resonant tremors. Tesla said the resonant frequency was 1 hour 49 minutes. His estimated frequency turned out to be amazingly accurate, as proved by the 1960 great earthquake that shook Chile. By 1960, geophysicists were able to measure the time taken for shockwaves to travel across
the Earth and back, and Tesla's estimates of 1 hour 49 minutes was proven to be remarkably accurate. By 1912, Tesla's amazing abilities could no longer be denied, and he was awarded the Nobel Prize because of his 900 patented new processes. What exactly were some of Tesla's achievements? He is the father of mind control. He is the father of weather control. He produced lightning in Colorado in an experiment to demonstrate weather control and electrical transmission. He designed a force field to stop air attacks on the United States during the Second World War. He demonstrated practical methods of weather control as far back as 1905 and weather modifications in 1907. He resonated the Earth with 100,000 volts. That's electrical charge volts. He invented wireless telegraphy. He invented the filament light bulb. He laid out a plan to light the Earth by means of turning the super ionosphere into a giant fluorescent light, which could permanently illuminate the entire Earth. He invented the charged particle death ray, so beloved by science fiction. He invented the very low frequency electrical emission system, the system now being widely used in a secret war against the United States by the Soviet Union, to which Marshal Sergei Akromeyer alluded in his warning to America to stop work on the SDI program or face an unpleasant surprise response. He proposed what is today the exact system used in our SDI program. As we shall see, the Soviet Union is presently engaged in a deadly secret war against the United States using Tesla's weather modification techniques, ELF and mind control, with incredible success, while we slumber away in a complacent dream world, ever ready to accept the barking of the jackals and hyenas of the press that such things as SDI, mind control, psychic metaphysical systems and weather modifications belong in the realm of science fiction and Star Wars. An interesting thing, at least for me, since I was one of the pioneers in exposing the Age of Aquarius, New Dark Age, New Age conspiracy, is that this evil comes under the heading of mind control and mind bending. What else if not mind control and mind bending experiments were carried out at the bestial Esalen Institute? Many of Tesla's work for good was corrupted at Esalen to turn the world into an invisible university capable of mind control and mind bending for evil purposes. Proof that my early research work into the Dark Ages, Age of Aquarius, New Dark Age was successful comes out in the vicious attacks that have been launched by those who seek to copy my work and who do not have for themselves the capacity to write their own material. A lady who wrote in to criticize my work sent me a paper, and on reading this I discovered the following: take out a dollar bill and observe Washington on the front and occult symbolism on the back. The evangelists contend that this country was founded upon Christianity. Nothing could be further from the truth. The founding fathers of our nation were Masons. And the letter, the work, quotes George Washington as saying, the United States is in no sense founded upon the Christian religion. Masonry is, of course, just another method of mind-bending and mind-control, in line with the New Age, New Dark Age, Age of Aquarius positions. The paper describes itself as a journal for New Ages. I believe I've made my point that the New Age, Age of Aquarius, is nothing but a diabolically evil part of a mind-control experiment on a national scale. And I think we can have proof of this in 1991 when we think of the unbelievable and stunning success of the mass propaganda operation, which blinded 90% of Americans to the truth as to what happened in the Persian Gulf. But to get back to Marshal Sergei Akromeyer's threat of an unpleasant surprise response, has anything really unpleasant and surprising taken place since he made his bellicose statement? The answer is yes, indeed. Let us examine a few cases of unexplained and apparently inexplicable events in the area of mind control. On March 30, 1987, a scientist engaged in security-related research, Mr. David Sands, filled the trunk of his car with cans of gasoline, then drove it at high speed into a vacant restaurant. He died in a fireball that burned him to a cinder. Sands is the fifth scientist engaged in security-related research to die under mysterious circumstances since last August. That's August of 1987. Coincidence? Absolutely not. In August, Vimal Javhiti jumped off the Clifton Suspension Bridge in Bristol, England, and fell to his death. In January 1986, Avtar Singh Gida disappeared from his job. Gida was found in Paris recently and could give absolutely no explanation as to how he got there, nor what he was doing in Paris. What do these men have in common? They were all scientists working on military-funded secret projects, some connected with the Marconi Underwater Acoustics Program, advanced computer software and signals processing, connected with submarine detection and torpedo guidance systems. Absolutely vital to the military and civilian sectors, insofar as the computer software is concerned. Three of the men worked for Marconi, and we must remember that Tesla preceded Marconi in the field of very low frequency electricity transmissions. Were their brainwaves tampered with? It is absolutely possible that all four men were subjected to ELF brainwave transmissions, which either scrambled their electronic brainwaves or so distorted and disturbed them that they lost all control of themselves. There is little doubt that these men were victims of what Marshal Sergei Akramayev called an unpleasant response. I've already mentioned the case of Captain William R. Hughes, who suffered a similar fate, and the cases of the so-called defectors who turned up in Moscow. During October 1986, Arnold Lockshin, a research biochemist at the Stellan Cancer Foundation Research Laboratory, vanished. After a promising start at Stellan in 1981, Lockshin began behaving strangely, failing to do his work, which got him fired. On Wednesday, October 8, 1986, the Soviet Union announced that Lockshin had, quote, defected to the Soviet Union, unquote, along with his wife and their three children. The Soviets claimed that Lockshin defected because he didn't like U.S. foreign policy, yet co-workers and his neighbors said that he was absolutely non-political and never once discussed politics. Co-workers said Lockshin had been an excellent research scientist for the first 5 years at Stellan. Thereafter, quote, strange behavior, unquote, was noted. He underwent a personality change, said one of his close associates, especially in the form of a negative outlook, which came about very suddenly, end of the statement by his co-worker. This, incidentally, is a typical reaction by persons exposed to ELF transmissions. Dr. Peter Delpoy, associate director of Stellan, said he liked to talk about radical politics, but in 6 years, and I quote what he said, I don't recall ever having had a political conversation with Lockshin, end of quote. What brought about Lockshin's defections? All the signs point to a fairly short period of exposure to intense ELF emissions. Experts with whom I discussed this case are agreed that it is a firm case of mind control, and that these cases all have one thing in common, apart from the common denominator of being engaged in security work. All the men became irrational and acted completely out of character, which is typical of the reaction by subjects to auto-suggestion, mind-bending and mind-control methods involving ELF transmissions. There are other cases of a similar nature where research scientists in the United States have suddenly quit their jobs, in several instances leaving their families, although no marital problems were known to exist. In the case of Asad Sharif, he strangled himself by tying a rope around his neck and fastening the other end to a tree. Then he drove his car away until he choked to death. No mean feat, because under normal conditions, where interference with brain waves is absent, he would have fallen unconscious, and unable to carry on driving, the car would have most likely stalled as his foot slipped off the gas pedal. Starting in 1978, the KGB launched a worldwide search for any persons who had been in contact with Dr. Tesla, either in person or through correspondence. Does the Soviet Union have any extremely low-frequency stations in existence? Apart from the mobile ones and the small but highly effective burst-of-light handheld stunner, there are three major stations in operation, one at Riga, another near the South Pole at Vostok, and a third on the Ustyurt Plateau. These bases are fully operational, and my intelligence source told me there are four others in the process of being set up. This was written in 1987, and as a follow-up, I can tell you that these four others are now fully operational. These stations, acting singly or together, can not only completely alter weather patterns, about which we shall be presently talking, but they can also create huge acoustic fields across the oceans to combat single ships or entire flotillas, such as the United States Sixth Fleet, for example. Tesla in experiments conducted with extremely low frequency transmissions and handheld vibrators back in 1905 proved conclusively the feasibility of deploying weather weapons for military purposes. We didn't take Tesla too seriously, but the Soviet Union did. Today, the Soviet Union is able to control huge weather zones across the world and is known to have played havoc with US weather patterns. In August of 1975, the Soviet Union proposed a ban on 19 man-made weather catastrophes at the Geneva Conference on International Disarmament. Why did the Soviet Union do this? Because it already had weather pattern altering abilities in position and wanted to prevent the United States from catching up by banning such weapons through international agreement. Among the 19 man-made catastrophes were specifically banned triggering of landslides, guidance of hurricanes or cyclones away from or in the direction of chosen targets, causing earthquakes, changing direction of rivers, destroying part of the Earth's ozone shield, reawakening dormant volcanoes, triggering avalanches, melting ice caps to flood coastal lands, and generating hail, rain, and fog. The Soviet Union's mind-bending, mind-altering program is codenamed Woodpecker. We were first warned about this dangerous program when the United States Embassy in Moscow was subjected to a sustained attack by ELF electromagnetic distant waves. Although strenuous countermeasures were adopted by U.S. experts, the extremely low-frequency waves penetrated every corner of our embassy. Most of the staff reported feeling disorientated, strange, dizzy, nauseous, and unable to concentrate. There were at least 15 severe cases where personnel had to be sent back to America suffering from hallucinations, and even then, they didn't recover for at least 6 months after arriving back in the United States. The Soviet Union were using Tesla's discoveries of how to arrange shortwave frequencies in such a way that they correspond with natural alpha brainwave pulses. The unit Tesla made was designed to bombard the brain with low-frequency electromagnetic waves operating on a frequency of 40 megahertz MHz. Pulse electronic magnetic waves simulate the brain's own electromagnetic current, producing a trance-like state and other unwelcome states. This is the system which was used to bombard the United States Embassy in Moscow. The Soviet transmitter used for mind-bending or scrambling of brains was codenamed LIDA. The trance-like state induced by LIDA was what caused the defections already previously talked about, as well as the bizarre behavior and the death of scientists, as mentioned earlier. LIDA can simulate and then replace the human brain's own electromagnetic current. By replacing the brain's own electromagnetic current, trances, hallucinations, and switching off, that is, death, can be artificially induced. It doesn't take much to imagination to see how LIDA can wreck our satellite surveillance systems involving, let's say, the CIA's Rhyolite and Shalit Biman code names by scrambling the operators' brains or putting personnel in a trance-like state. Rhyolite and Shalit code designations, for example, are CIA NRO. By inducing an operator to put a single letter out of place, the satellites could not react properly to signals. Also, the personnel who turn our satellites towards or away from the sun could be mind-controlled to send the satellite an incorrect signal that would turn it toward the sun when it should be facing in the opposite direction. Code words are known as specats, and even a single misplaced letter could end an operation costing billions of dollars. How easy it would be to achieve such a condition if the Russians succeeded with their mind-control weaponry and put operator personnel out of action at crucial moments, as is now distinctly possible. It is something we have to face up to in a big hurry. A short word about specats. These are code words for special categories of intelligence information and are intended to designate the special procedures required for handling and distributing material where the source of and method of obtaining the intelligence is extra especially sensitive. Most words are derived from the Brusa Agreement of May 17, 1943. For instance, gamma would denote intercept material which is ultra-sensitive. Let us suppose that our operators on duty at a particular location were subjected to Soviet electromagnetic attacks utilizing ELF. Telling them to change the word gamma to delta series code words, which are less sensitive and therefore technically susceptible to easier intercept by Soviet KGB and GRU specialists. The end result would be a complete breakdown of our entire system of coding. We shall now proceed with the matter of controlling and changing weather patterns and Soviet electromagnetic weapons of war directed against both civilian and military targets in space and in the skies above our country. What about space? Can Tesla Scalar ELF weaponry be used to attack our launch vehicles and satellites, our rockets or civilian radar, or our traffic control systems? There is growing concern and serious disquiet over the fact that Challenger was downed by a ball of artificial lightning on January 28th. Prior to Challenger's death plunge, there were 24 successful space shuttle missions. Two things contributed to the destruction of Challenger: highly unnatural weather conditions which prevailed at launch time and unexplained vibrations that ruptured a fuel tank, causing fuel to rush out and to go out in a ball of fire. Can these two factors be put down to human error, failure of equipment, and launching when the weather was wrong for it? The answer is both yes and no. My personal feeling, based upon a great deal of material I was shown and on unconfirmed reports from sources I don't normally use, leads me to believe that Challenger was sabotaged by the KGB-GRU departments charged with obstructing America's space program. My information has it that just hours prior to the Challenger launch, three Soviet spy trawlers of the type used to intercept telemetry signals, which were a permanent fixture off the coast of Cape Canaveral, weighed anchor and disappeared over the horizon. This event was bound to generate a great deal of curiosity, as Soviet spy fishing trawlers, whose bristling array of antenna clearly marked them as signal intercept vessels, have been lying off Cape Canaveral in international waters from the first day NASA's space program became operational. Why were they suddenly withdrawn, especially at such a crucial moment? My Washington source told me that it is most likely they were warned to leave the area because of an imminent electromagnetic ELF weapon attack on the Challenger, which would inadvertently have disabled their ultra-sensitive listening equipment. Although electromagnetic ELF transmissions can be directed at a specific target, the blanketing effect might take in other unintended targets also, so it appears that the Soviet spy trawlers decided to get out of harm's way, knowing what was coming. The force which hit Challenger was akin to an electrical force field, but of a more devastating kind. The electrical force field which struck Challenger induced serious heavy vibrations. Remember earlier on I mentioned Tesla's handheld vibrator, so bear this in mind as we proceed. The greatest risk faced by space shuttles like the Challenger comes from vibrations. In spite of having overcome the risk in theory, the first space shuttle flight in 1981 proved that vibration risks had not been overcome and remained a definite hazard. According to NASA experts, who I cannot name for obvious reasons, vibrations occur regularly on all shuttle launches where solid fuel boosters are used. The 20 Hz shuttle booster vibration was known only to NASA scientists. It is very important to bear this in mind because I will bring us back to it later on, as it has to do with Tesla's selective resonance findings and how the Challenger was downed by the Soviet Union's KGB specialist scientists. Just shortly after Challenger lifted off, strange streaks of light, something like those of St. Elmo's fire, appeared on Challenger. Subsequent analysis of still photographs and videos clearly show the streaks of light. NASA experts now believe that the streaks were probably a trademark of an attack by an ELF electromagnetic shot at Challenger from a far distant pulse mode. Similar streaking was observed during the launch of Atlantis shuttle, which was followed by a heavy sonic boom some 12 to 15 minutes later. As sonic booms made by jet planes occur within seconds of breaking the sound barrier, this particularly loud boom could not be explained. It was definitely not made by a fast jet plane, that much we do know. Atlantis escaped unscathed, and space expert Colonel Thomas Bearden believes that the attack on Atlantis was a trial run using a low non-destructive charge in preparation for knocking down the Challenger. The Challenger disaster was not an isolated occurrence. Subsequent intelligence investigations into Challenger's tragedy had brought to light the failure of 6 U.S. rockets, which had enjoyed a high rate of functional reliability up until late 1985, the most notably reliable rocket being the Titan 34D. This rocket is absolutely vital to the security of America and Europe, as U.S. satellites used to observe Soviet military movements are carried aloft by Titans. On 28th of August 1985, a Titan 34D rocket exploded in less than 5 seconds after liftoff. On April 18, 1986, a second Titan 34D also exploded immediately after liftoff. Up to this time, Titans had never failed. The Air Force said it didn't know what caused these two failures, and a spokesman called it, and I quote, a real enigma, unquote. A national disaster would have been a more accurate statement. With our Titans out of action and Challenger destroyed, America is 5 years behind in its satellite monitoring programs. As a result, at present, our whole satellite surveillance system is in jeopardy. A Scarlet transmitter can, and in fact has been used against civilian airliners in at least 4 instances that I know of, one being the December 8, 1985 disaster of a DC-8 chartered by the Department of Defense to fly U.S. military personnel home from the Middle East, crashed on takeoff at Gander. The plane crashed, losing power for no apparent reason, shortly after takeoff. The crash took the lives of over 200 United States military personnel and crew. On April the 8th, 1986, 3 witnesses to the disaster told Canadian Broadcasting Television News that they had observed a strange yellow light like a halo all around the doomed aircraft. Colonel Bearden states that the halo is the signature of a Scala howitzer electromagnetic shot, and the glow or halo came about because the plane was hit by a high electrical charge. Conclusion: sabotage by the Soviet Union using an ELF transmitter. One of the most far-reaching acts of war being conducted by the Soviet Union against America is weather modification and weather control. This is certainly not new. Tesla demonstrated weather control in 1905, but nobody on our side saw its military application possibilities. Basically, and without injecting a lot of technical detail into this program, a high-pressure area can be created and kept in position over the desired site by 2 Scala beam interference and adding energy at a distant interference site. By taking away the energy, a low-pressure area is created at the target zone. By a process of slowly rotating the distant transmitters over the whole of the distant interference zone, let's say, for example, the coastal zones of California, high pressures and low pressures can be made to move, or more importantly, a high-pressure zone can be installed over the desired target area. This technique captures cloud masses and the jet streams that flow into the stratosphere. This action adds up to weather control over the target area, and that is precisely what has been happening over California for the past 5 years, hence the disastrous drought which has gone on for 5 years. 1977 was a particularly important year for meteorologists because of a discovery they made, that is, a blocking of both the east and west coasts of the United States and along the Finnish border down to Poland and Russia. Almost as though a curtain had been lowered, the normal jet streams and weather circulation movements appear to be abnormal, almost as if a curtain was blocking them, in much the same way as a curtain in front of an open window impedes the flow of air through that window. Upon close examination, a startling discovery was made. Each blocked area consisted of stalled waves of electromagnetic energy. Researching Geneva arms control meetings, it was noted that the 1975 meeting disclosed the truth about weather modifications and control, and that it is technically possible to guide hurricanes, cause landslides, activate volcanoes, generate earthquakes, and stop rain from falling with attendant disastrous consequences. That is why in the same year, 1975, the Geneva Arms Control Meeting banned 19 artificially created weather catastrophes, as related earlier on in this message. In December 1983, at the Christmas period, 21 states across America experienced exceptionally low temperatures. The lows in 60 cities broke all records. In March 1983, weathermen noted that the disturbances out in the Pacific, one particular one dubbed El Nino, was the most severe it had been for at least a century, with the trade winds stalled. Even more frightening, the trade winds reversed their normal directional flow. Australia was hit by a disastrous drought, while parts of the Pacific coast and of South America staggered under the impact of near cloud bursts of rain. Strange changes in weather patterns were noted in many areas of the United States. Was this caused by the world tipping on its axis, a favorite explanation for severe weather changes, and lately it is blamed on the Chernobyl nuclear power disaster, or was it an act of God? How was it that while the USA was either flooded or cracked by drought, the USSR in comparison was enjoying warmer weather and certainly more stable weather patterns? The answer is that the Soviet Union was practicing controlled weather techniques, those copied from Tesla, while we sat in front of our TV sets watching our favorite soap opera or football game, weather permitting, of course. It has been established that following the 1975 Geneva Arms Control Convention Agreement on man-made weather disasters, the Soviets turned in earnest to perfecting Earth electrical resonance, succeeding in bringing about stable, localized ELF electromagnetic fields. The first the United States knew of it came with a severe winter of 1976-1977. The Soviets achieved their success in weather control by pulling jet streams very much further south, bringing masses of frigid air as far south as the citrus belt of Florida. It was such a frigid air mass that hit Florida just at the time the Challenger was due to be launched. It is strongly suspected that this unnatural weather pattern was caused by Soviet weather modification interferences, and it has now been firmly established that such interferences have been going on for a number of years. Because of long-stalled high-pressure zones and blocking curtains, which are the trademark of Tesla-invented war by weather, it is certain that the Soviet Union is carrying out a weather war against the United States of America. That is why the loss of the Delta rocket is so serious. It was carrying a $57 million weather satellite, and its loss leaves America with only a single weather satellite aloft until the year 1990. And remember, this was written in 1987 and proved to be highly accurate. Now in 1991, we've only just been able to remedy that situation. The bizarre weather patterns over Baja California and Alaska in 1976-1977 are now being laid at the door of the Soviet Union. These abnormalities were caused by blocking the flow of jet streams into the northern hemisphere through artificially stalled high-pressure fronts. The transmitting site responsible for ELF transmissions, responsible for changing the jet stream's direction, is located on the Ust-Yurt Plateau in the Soviet Union. By checking on extremely low-frequency electromagnetic signals emanating from this area and monitoring on a 24-hour around-the-clock watch, it was firmly established that the moment these ELF transmissions stopped for 2 weeks in 1980, the jet stream flows over the northern hemisphere returned to the usual stable pattern. Is this conclusive proof? Scientists and meteorologists say it is. What was the outcome of these Ust-Yurt Plateau ELF transmissions? Weather records show that in November 1985, the United States experienced its heaviest snowfalls, with nearly 6 million square miles of the country under thick snow. And take note, please, that this was November and not January. In Alaska, warm weather prevailed with a shortage of snow. Weather records showed that for the first time since records were kept, Anchorage, Alaska was without snow on the ground at Christmas. A coincidence? If you believe that, you will believe that David Rockefeller is a Baptist preacher. As far south as Bakersfield, California, strange things happened with the weather that December and January of 1985. Bakersfield experienced dense fog for 16 consecutive days, while back in Alaska, the temperature was lower in the daytime than it was at night. What was causing these strange weather patterns? Was it due to atomic explosions beneath the Earth in Nevada, which had tilted the Earth on its axis? Was it due to acid rain? The answer is no. It was due to the Soviet Union having established a huge, stalled high-pressure zone centered over the Rocky Mountains that blocked winter storms from traveling along their normal routes. And let me say, that is exactly what has happened again in California in the last 5 years, which has caused a very serious drought. Let me emphasize that the stalled high-pressure system was caused by extremely low-frequency transmissions emanating from the Ustyurat Plateau region of the Soviet Union, forming a massive wave of electromagnetic energy against which the high-pressure system was stalled. Can we be sure that weather modifications and control is possible? Yes, we certainly can be sure. Intensive research into Tesla ELF signals by an electrical engineer, Mr. Al Betlek, proved beyond any doubt that ELF transmissions emanating from the Soviet Union coincided exactly with changed and abnormal conditions in the United States. Let us examine some very alarming weather catastrophes which have occurred in the United States in recent years, following the discovery that the USSR was able to control and change weather patterns using the Tesla method. Remember the artificial lightning experiment conducted by Tesla in Colorado? We discovered that a disastrous drought had appeared in the equatorial belt, notably across the sub-Sahara regions of Africa. Millions were dying of starvation. Millions did die because of the totally abnormally prolonged drought conditions in Ethiopia, Somalia, and so on. Was this part of the global 2000 plan to rid the Earth of billions of people by the year 2000? I absolutely believe in this theory, and it may well be one reason for the United States failing to confirm the fact that the Soviet Union has the full capacity to control weather patterns. The Council on Foreign Relations is working very closely with Moscow, so it is not outside the realms of possibility that Moscow gave the order to stall weather systems and withhold rain from these large tracts of Africa with the intention of killing off millions of people in terms of the genocidal Global 2000 report. Does this sound futuristic? Does it sound like science fiction? Unhappily, too many people in the West who have had their minds bent still believe it is all part of just so much wishful thinking. But if we take the trouble to read through the work of Tesla and study his patents on file with the United States Patent Office in Washington, D.C., as Mr. David Rockefeller's army of researchers do on a daily basis, we shall soon be forced to realize that it is us, the majority of the people, who are hopelessly out of tune and out of step with reality. Tesla has shown and demonstrated this often enough. Tesla is the father of radar, for example. In 1900, he demonstrated that radio waves could be bounced back from solid objects. He showed reporters how by using only a pocket vibrator, he could generate enough resonant tremors to split the Earth in two. Pocket vibrators utilizing ELF, extremely low-frequency electromagnetic pulses, are presently in use by the KGB and the GRU. Evidence is available in CIA files to prove that the so-called defection of Arlen Lockshin and Air Force Captain William R. Hughes were caused by the use of ELF pocket-sized vibrators or light bursts. Tesla was at least a century ahead of his time. The United States was too slow to realize that it had a genius of unlimited talent and ability on its doorstep. The Soviet Union took the opposite view. That is why today it is at least 15 years ahead of us in space weaponry, microwave weapons, and weather control and weather-altering systems. The Tesla howitzer, for example, was capable of hurling concentrated balls of electricity at targets 25 miles away. Unfortunately, either out of jealousy or sheer disbelief, this great weapon we could have been using for the last 40 years was simply pushed aside and put on the shelf. Tesla demonstrated over 40 years ago that he could broadcast electricity over a distance of 25 miles without wires. What a war-winning weapon that would and could have become. As a result, in limiting the ability of the human mind, the West is paying a very high price. The Soviet Union is today very far ahead of the West in mind control, ELF, and weather control. The Soviet Union and Warsaw Pact forces are fully equipped with ELF microwave units capable of altering the brainwaves of NATO commanders and field officers. Weather control and weather modifications are certainly in the hands of the Soviet Union, and they have been at war with us in this department for many years. In 1985, Tacoma, Washington experienced a period of devastatingly torrential rain, causing trees to crash down and rivers to flood their banks. Such rain had never been seen before, and it was called, and I quote, the 100-year rain, unquote. What caused this disastrous condition? Was it natural or man-made? We have since discovered that it was caused by a man-made stalled high-pressure system along the Rocky Mountains. Nobody could say how, when, and where the high-pressure ridge came from until the discovery of a large concentration of electromagnetic, extremely low-frequency electrical masses in the atmosphere above the Rockies, the trademark, as I have indicated, of the Tesla-style weather modification and control, which the Soviet Union has turned into a weapon of war against the United States. The application of weather control to wartime situations can be readily seen. What a disaster if our NATO forces were trying to stem the onrushing Warsaw Pact forces and the neutron shells couldn't get through because terrible rain and or snowstorms made flights impossible, or else the aircraft ferrying urgently needed neutron shells from the United States to Europe began to go down in the ocean one after another as Tesla electromagnetic extremely low frequency waves hit them, causing flameouts and shutdown of flight electrical systems, as has already happened in dozens of accidents, and I use accidents as a quotation, involving U.S. military planes. I want to leave weather modification for a moment and go back to the question of our rockets being hit by strange bursts of light and causing them to explode. I'm updating this 1991, and I want to say there is no doubt at all that in the interim period when I first wrote this, that's 1987 to 1991, much evidence has emerged that both Titans that crashed were hit by artificial balls of lightning from ELF weapons. As videotapes show, balls of light moving away from the debris of the exploded Titans. The destruction of a Nike rocket through misfire confirmed that an ELF weapon was used against it. This was the first Nike rocket to fail in 55 missions, and subsequent investigations have proved convincingly that these failures were not caused by anything mechanical. The failure of a Delta rocket was next for the first time in 178 launches. Engineers called in to make a detailed analysis of the Delta failure came to the conclusion that it was not due to any design flaw or malfunction. The loss of this particular Delta rocket was a severe blow, as it was carrying a weather satellite, the significance of which I have already dealt with. Further investigations by top-ranking specialists at NASA and intelligence experts in rocketry discovered that the Delta rocket blew up because of extreme vibration, which damaged insulation in the main engine. Top expert in the world in his field is Colonel Bearden, whose name I mentioned earlier. Colonel Bearden closely examined the NASA videotape on the May 3rd Delta liftoff. Bearden is well known in NASA circles for his expertise in analyzing videotapes of rocket launches. What Bearden discovered by close analysis of the videotape was the presence of an unexplained light coming up to the Delta rocket from below and to the side of it, and then hitting the rocket. The light turned out to be a ball of artificially created lightning, which fitted exactly the type of lightning ball that hit the Atlantis shuttle in a test shot of non-destructive force. There is no doubt that this was a test run for the Challenger. The only conclusion one can come to is the one reached by Colonel Bearden, namely that the Soviet Union embarked upon a program designed to keep United States rockets out of space, thereby limiting United States space capabilities and sharply curtailing our satellite intelligence system, using a ball of light, which is actually a stream of electromagnetic power, formed and released by a far-distance scalar transmitter. A scalar transmitter is a physical quantity which has magnitude only, that is, the actual beam that emanates from the transmitter, whereas a vector is a physical quantity which has both magnitude and direction, distance being a scalar quantity and displacement being a vector quantity. I needed to inject that bit of technical information to explain exactly what the scalar is. All credit is due to Colonel Thomas Bearden for this exercise, which broke open the case against the Soviet Union. Bearden should also be credited with forcing the State Department to demand a cessation of hostile action against our embassy in Moscow. Previously, the State Department apologists, ever fearful of offending Moscow, downplayed the matter and tried to minimize its effect. Embassy employees were forbidden to discuss their experiences with the press and even their relatives. The hostile action against our embassy was a test run. Shortly thereafter, ELF units appeared alongside Warsaw Pact forces for the first time, and we need to understand exactly what this program of bombarding our embassy was designed to do. In retrospect, it is certain that the State Department was under direct CFO orders not to say anything about the attack on the embassy for fear of offending its friends in the Kremlin. And this is not as far-fetched as it sounds. I have many other case histories, proven ones, to back up my belief, but limitations of time and space do not permit going into these cases during this message. When the embassy staff complained of dizziness, headaches, disorientation, nausea, and so on, why did the U.S. government deny any connection between their condition and the microwave attacks on the embassy, while at the same time allowing embassy personnel to take long periods of sick leave with compensation, and as I said, in many cases, actually sending them back to the United States for good? These are things that we need to know about, and I hope that this message will in some way shed some light on mysterious things that have been happening. Thank you for listening.